Welcome, brothers and sisters, to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast, where we use the best of science and experience in coaching, training, and physical therapy to help you get and stay HTK, and that's hard to kill, on the playing field and in the game of life. We choose fast, strong, agile, and durable over weak, slow, stiff, and fragile. It's what we're about, and thanks for being a part of this magnificent tribe. We're your hosts, John Zombro, physical therapist, coach, and author, and business development expert, stunning conversationalist, the magnificent PK.
Well, the only thing you got right there was my initials, and that's just fine, John. How you doing?
I am doing well. You're too humble. Love you, man. And I switched it up today. French roast, French press, and just I'm loving it.
Well, I mean, I'm waiting for one of these days you're going to be like, I'm doing a mushroom broth, and it's really firing me up. I wonder what you'd have to drink and not be fired up.
That there's a good thought there. Good question. I did that mushroom thing a couple years ago. I really got into all the different medicinal mushroom powders and exploring those, and they were okay. I mean, I'm not here to diss that or anyone doing it, but I just kind of faded away from that because I couldn't really say that I was noticing wow differences. And at the same time, I wasn't getting wow flavors like I'm getting out of this French press right now.
No. I'll tell you what, is there anything that you haven't explored? I think this confirms it. The answer is no.
Well, I mean, did have a conversation not too long ago with somebody who was asking me about the 80s. And I told him the truth. I said, man, I lived the 80s. I loved the 80s. I was the 80s. I am the 80s, and there it is.
I love it. So what are we doing today?
Well, we're going to dive into episode number 132, and its topic is this, personalized training programs, how to create a training program that fits you. And that goes along with this being the month of June, which is peak performance training month here at the Lifetime Athlete. And this week, our focus is on personalized training. So that's what you and I will do. And I'm almost ready to jump in, but I have a couple of quick stories to share. And the first one is also related to a conversation with a different person. And I got some pushback. And we were having a chat recently, a guy and I, let's just say, and talking about my platform and my position and my opinion and experience and all these things. And as we know, as listeners, thanks for being here, listeners. We love you. There is a necessity. We don't even doubt it or question it for every human to be a lifetime athlete. So ultimately, this guy was like, oh man, I'm defensive about that. I don't like you saying that. You're challenging me. I think that, humans can just be, you can exist and just be pretty good and average, and you don't have to be an athlete. And I said, well, there's some context to each of our opinions, but ultimately it came down to me asking him a couple of questions. I said this, how would you like to have athletic, elastic, disease-resistant blood vessels? Would you rather have athletic, dementia-resistant neurons as opposed to inferior ones? And how about athletic, you fill in the blank here, sexual function? And the guy said, well, when you put it that way, I guess I would like to have the athletic things rather than those crappy ones. And I said, good. Now take that motivation and identity. Join our tribe because you're welcome, but you got to put in the work, help others, never look back.
So what did he say after you had that conversation wrap up?
He didn't become the zealous believer I'd hoped for, but he's like, yeah, I'll think about it. And of course, I usually respond immediately when I hear, yeah, I'll think about it. I'm like, nah, you won't. Conversation, no. Quit wasting my time. You're a lost cause. Sorry.
Well, John, I think that it's really when you do put it like that, no one would choose the alternative. And really what your platform is about is more just about how to achieve that based on science and just kind of putting in the context of where we're at here in June 2020.
Yeah, I mean, the human beast is an animal, and the human beast is born to be athletic. You know, we give that up and we lose it, but we don't have to, and that's really what we're talking about here. And so on a much more positive note, quick shout out to awesome listener Lindsay. So Lindsay, if you're listening today, I think you're amazing. And here's the story about this, folks. I bumped into Lindsay at the local track the other day as she lunge walked an entire lap around that track as part of her workout, which also included cinder block lifts and stadium stairs. Hashtag get her done, W-O-W.
Yeah, kudos to you. A whole lap of lunges. Woo.
Yeah, I mean, I've done that a couple times in life, and when you wake up the next morning, the glutes, they are a singing. So, Lindsay, you inspired me, and I salute you.
Same here.
Okay, so when you are thinking about personalizing your training program, the very first thing that you might want to consider is knowing your strengths.
Yeah, I think that it's a great place to start. And of course, I think that this is where you, John, would encourage people to start to look at some positives.
Yeah, and so how I do this is I'll basically ask a person to rate themselves in a certain way. And I think I can explain this fairly succinctly. There are five categories of physical capacity in the athletic human beast. And those are strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance. And I will ask clients to use a three-tiered rating system. There's going to be a lot more coming out about that in the future. But a three is good or good plus, two is fair, and one is poor. And it's really simple. And so most people are actually a little harder on themselves than they need to be. And so I kind of help them make sure they frame it appropriately, but they will rate themselves, you know, three, two, or one in those five categories. And, you know, obviously a perfect score would be 15. Very few people have or need that, but we definitely want to see, you know, most people hitting around 11 and up. So to talk about those things very briefly, and stop me anytime because I'm enthusiastic.
Strength
is it's how much, you know, it's one rep max where it's appropriate or approximations of it. So when we talk about strength, like how strong are you? Can you lift a car or whatever you need to do? Maybe if it's not burning and all that. So that's strength. Then we have speed. What's your max velocity potential? You know, probably in running, yes, but again, we can extrapolate that out into other means. Power. So power is a little bit different because it's kind of the expression of strength and speed combined. And of course, in physics, it's force times distance divided by time. And we can look at power in both an aerobic and an anaerobic capacity. So an aerobic test for power sometimes is considered the 1 mile run. Anaerobic would be, okay, you've got a weighted sled, it's a 30-yard push, something like this. Then agility, and I've kind of, morphed some things when I think about agility in the human athletic beast, because it does involve flexibility or range of motion, mobility, the ability to flow through that motion or movement that we do, and stability where we need it in the body. So all of this is that graceful, supple, fluid motion that is defining an athlete who's not restricted, and it involves movement ownership and execution. So agility, really important. And I think we want to value it to the way I described it. And then lastly, endurance. We have to have durability or fatigue resistance. You know, if you can't get through the day, well, that might be a problem. So those five things again: strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance, the athletic capacities of the human beast. And all we want to do is figure out, well, okay, you know, I'm pretty good in a couple of them, really strong in one, and then I've got one that I'm just crummy at that maybe I need to be aware of. So that's how we look at strengths.
Got it. So then, so do we do give our, is it more important to look at those individually as a 3-2-1, or do we do a total score out of 15, or?
Yeah, I like to live very generally and, you know, get sort of impressions, but most people don't care for that. They want numbers. They want spreadsheets. You know, sometimes sure, the more sure, complexity, sure. The better. So I'm like, well, I'm going to meet you in the middle. That's why I designed the system. So you've got the five categories. They can be scored 3-2-1. Perfect score is 15. And again, it's almost unrealistic for most of us, but being below 10 means we don't have much in the way of strengths, and we have probably a lot of weakness. And that is a concern both for performance and for long-term health. And so I mentioned the number 11. Well, I like to see people hit 11 by having 4 2s and a 3 in any of those things. So that's good. That's, you know, you're going to do pretty well and not have a body that's prone to breakdown. Maybe we can even pop up a couple more of those categories to, you know, get that score up a tad higher, but 11's my minimum goal for folks. I don't think you can be average across the board and still be a peak performer. You've got to shine somewhere.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. Absolutely. Okay. So what do we do from here then?
We sip some coffee.
Yes, of course.
That's what I'm talking about, brother. So, yeah, recognize your weaknesses. That's the next thing. And so if we have these strengths, we also want to just, you know, be, you know, love yourself, of course. But let's go, okay, any category, again, strength, speed, power, agility, endurance, that you're scoring a 1 in, meaning you think that you're poor or someone helps you to see that in a way that's not demeaning. We want to be aware of that and recognize that weakness, because this awareness, you know, kind of helps us to figure out, oh, okay, well, I'm going to eventually have these biases or ratios in my training to either hone strengths or shore up weaknesses. That's kind of how all that stuff fits together. And I think there's some really good examples that we can talk about.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the first thing I'd say is this. Be aware that your weakness, if you maybe only have one of them, possibly two, but maybe one, it may not always affect your performance in your given sport or desired goal.
Okay. Can you give me an example of that?
Yeah. So let's say we have a power lifter. You know, power lifter, that's, you know, weightlifting is the sport, it's the competition. Power lifting, bench, squat, and deadlift. A lot of times the term weightlifting is reserved for Olympic weightlifting, which is just clean and jerk and snatch. So I wanted to make sure with my nomenclature I was fairly accurate. But sure. if a power lifter has limited agility, or in other words, another popular term, movement variability, that's actually good for lifting, because we don't want to have a lot of degrees of freedom under heavy load. And that allows the power lifter to basically be very stiff, strong, stable in the specific track or range of motion or movement pattern that he or she is using. So actually having a mild weakness in this agility can be good for lifting.
I like that example, because taken out of context, it could be, well, you know, you have limited movement variability, that's bad. But actually, if you look at the comprehensive picture of this particular athlete and their discipline, it is good. It actually supports them. It's a positive. That makes sense.
And you just, if you're a lifter, more often than not, you want to be an oak, a mighty oak, not a willow. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of, you know, the way to think about that. But now, another example within that same line is that same dude may have fairly poor aerobic fitness, you know, just doesn't have a lot of aerobic fitness, not much overall aerobic endurance. And of course, you can make the argument again that, well, you don't need it. He doesn't need it for his sport. You know, he's going to walk out there. He's going to lift. Light's going to change. He's going to put the weight down and it's done. And so you can say, well, I mean, we don't really need to train this guy that much for aerobic fitness, because he doesn't really need it. And if we put too much time there, that might even detract from his other types of training, which is necessary for sports success.
Right. Okay. So do you think that in that particular second example that you said there, like poor aerobic fitness that wouldn't affect his performance, but is it something that you would you say that it's important to look at in terms of overall health and longevity?
Exactly, PK.
Okay.
You know, I think if we acknowledge that if a weakness in any of those categories is present, if it exists for too many years, it will potentially adversely affect health. And so we always want to make sure we're doing enough to keep health, even when we're pursuing peak performance. And so that's where there's an argument out there. It rages, actually, a debate about, well, you know, if you're going to have your absolute peak performance, you have to compromise health. I'm not so sure I agree. Actually, I know I don't agree, but here's the point. Same example. That low amount of agility or, again, movement variability, if we use that term, in the lifter may eventually increase injury risk elsewhere, you know, like in other movements that aren't those lifts because he doesn't have, you know, enough movement available. So he might bang up against end range on a tissue inadvertently. Or it could just limit the function of this dude outside the gym. So in the gym, you know, he's going to have, you know, great functionality, but if he can't move in certain ways, you know, maybe the family's going to go water skiing or something. And it's like, ooh, that's a little scary. And in addition to that concern about the increase of injury risk or limitations in function, we also want to think about that other example with this same athlete. If there's a lack of endurance and consequently a lack of aerobic fitness below baseline, that may compromise long-term cardiovascular health.
Absolutely.
So once we know our strengths and our weaknesses, we just move along and we say, oh, well, okay, let us address any movement dysfunctions which may exist.
I like it. I like it. So we're working through the this process, strengths, weaknesses. How do we think about or self-evaluate these movement dysfunctions?
Asymmetry is probably the best word to begin with. And I would say right off the bat that an asymmetric movement pattern, actually, it probably exists in most of us. And first of all, it may not be a problem. So again, we want to address movement dysfunction, but sometimes a mild asymmetry might not be a problem, and it might not even be fixable.
Okay, well that makes perfect sense with me. Keep going.
So sometimes a body will undergo what we call self-organization. You know, it'll self-organize in the presence of specific issues with anatomy or demands of a sport. And if it is not necessarily injurious or painful, and it's very effective, in most cases, we may not want to consider fixing it. Just leave it. Like the best example that we've talked about here on the show is Usain Bolt's running form. And all that debate about, you know, people have said, well, you know, if I could clean up his form, I could make him go faster. And it's almost laughable because the real experts, the few people who I really think are really the best in biomechanics and speed never say that. They're like, no, you probably don't want to touch that because you could take a guy who ran 9.58 for the 100 and make him a 10, you know, a 10.2, 10.3, 10.4 runner, which we wouldn't want to do. And so that's an interesting controversy, talking about movement dysfunction, but every asymmetry is not necessarily a dysfunction. And I like to talk about that Bolt thing forever because there was the great Olympic athlete, you know, Michael Johnson, who was one of the people who had suggested, well, if I got Bolt to run more like me, you know, that he might even be faster. And well, you know, Michael Johnson never broke 10 seconds in the 100. So I'm not so sure we want to make those types of claims.
I mean, it's just the proof's in the pudding. It's on the clock. Don't mess with it. It's clearly working. He's not in pain. There's no significant injury. There's just that's just a matter of pomposity more than anything, because the proof is in the pudding. So But that's not always the case. What if we're seeing something and it is suboptimal and we want to look at our movement dysfunction because potentially there's something that's keeping us from performing at the high level?
Yeah, that's the important point here. So if that, I like that term suboptimal that you used. And so if movement, if the pattern is ineffective and or it's uncomfortable, it really should be viewed as a red flag. And if we can find and fix this, we're going to do some good things because we can reduce the chance that performance will be poor or that injury could result. So, you know, shoring up, tuning up movement patterns where it's applicable is gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk to me more.
Well, this takes us to our usual discussion about mechanics versus metabolics. And, you know, both are important in training, but form matters. And we need to get mechanics really working well before we invest too far into metabolics, or else we're just leaving things on the table. And that's the point that I would make about movement dysfunction. And a person probably needs to work with a physical therapist and at least temporarily utilize some corrective work if they have these dysfunctions. And an example would be last month, you know, we were talking about foot strike and foot function. So for any athlete, if they are, you know, having some issues with force management at the ground, and you know, they can enhance their ground contact, they can reduce their ground contact time, enhance foot stiffness. Yeah, that's a great movement dysfunction to address. You can also take a thrower who, like, maybe they lack something, you know, is something adequate mobility in the shoulder, the hip, or the trunk. All those things have to sequence appropriately depending on what the activity is, and they're compensating poorly. We can address that in many cases and give them more power and less joint stress. And the same thing's true with rackets and bats and golf clubs.
Absolutely. No, those are both very tangible examples of how the movement dysfunction is limiting the upside.
Yeah, and if I was just going to make a shameless plug, you can set up an online session with me. We can do video movement analysis, and we can consult about fixing a movement problem with just a few clicks. And solving these kinds of problems is often easy with the technology we have available today, and the results can be amazing.
Absolutely. And I think that it really is, of course, again, if we go back to what we're talking about, personalizing your training program, if this is a roadblock, if this is a, you know, movement dysfunction is keeping you from getting to where you want to go, ultimately, you must address it to get further down the road.
Indeed. And so we go through our little checklist, and we said, okay, well, let's figure out what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are. Do we have any patterns or movement dysfunctions that need to be addressed? Now we say, let's respect your injury history.
Yes, of course.
And I can explain that, as optimistic as we may be here, you and I, and most of our listeners, I bet, life happens to lifetime athletes. And, you know, there are areas of the body where maybe you've had an orthopedic injury or surgery, and maybe just some arbitrary figure. Well, you came back pretty doggone good, but maybe you're 97% of original tissue quality, health, mobility, something like that. Well, good as new might not be possible in a case like that. And you may have to embrace the new you.
Yeah, I think that this is, this really isn't, when I think about this moment in time for an athlete, a lifetime athlete in our case, it's not even it doesn't have to be a harsh conversation. It's just a, you know, a reality check. And I think that once you acknowledge, if you have a situation like this happening in your person, then you can move forward in a positive way. The, you know, denials, I guess, sort of like the mental and emotional side, could be just as big of hurdles to overcome as the actual injury history itself.
Yeah, I mean, we have to move past disappointment and possibly delusion or denial, but, you know, hashtag find a way, hashtag create the friggin' win.
A lot of hashtags today. So what do we do? Say, okay, I've got this. This is the reality. What do I do now?
Yeah. So most of the time, expert rehab and training progression, you know, will help you get maybe closer to 99%. Again, is an arbitrary number, but, you know, that can happen in some injury cases, or even there are cases where a person can be better than before, kind of like Steve Austin, the $6 million man. But let's say that you have an individual who has an injury, surgery and rehab go well, but their prior or pre-injury performance level was quite low. They lacked a lot of those initial categories. We talked about strength, speed, endurance, agility, and power, and we tune that up. Well, now suddenly we might have made them better. But in most cases, I'm going to say that, you know, once you get a body, if, you know, I don't want to speak too much for you, but like say you and I know we've had some injuries and surgeries,
sure.
And now is the time to embrace the orthopedic workaround.
Absolutely. I embrace it with open arms.
Yeah. So that might need to become a part of our repertoire. And this could be that, okay, I know this, to have a slightly unstable knee. Maybe I have a back with an irreversible flexion sensitivity, or a shoulder that's less tolerant of overhead loading. Okay, that's fine. Get it as good as you can get it, then protect it by choosing sports and exercises that the area finds friendly and tolerable and not aggravating, because grinding through pain should be viewed as unnecessary. It's not actually noble. It's possibly stupid. And it's a rapid path to more surgeries and joint replacements, as well as a decreased quality of life.
Yeah. And I do think that as we talked about at length here in different shows and different contexts, this, you know, by squaring up with yourself and just being honest, you can get to, you know, where you want to go for the most part in different ways. For me, as you know, and listeners who tune in know, I've got a dodgy peg. I got a bad knee. So like for me, you know, sprinting isn't happening on the track, but I can get the same thing on the bike. And that's just, I mean, that, you know, that's not rocket science. Obviously, that's something that, you know, I've gone to through coaching and guidance from you, but it's a reality, but it's not bad. It doesn't have to be bad. It can be positive.
Absolutely. I can see you going beast mode on the bike and a friggin' breaking a crank arm because you got so much power.
Yeah. No, trust me. No one wants to see that. It is not a good look, but it gets the job done.
Well, I beg to differ, but respectfully, I would say here's the solution to respecting your injury history is get a good coach. And a coach can help you figure this stuff out, you know, how to design that training more optimally. And, you know, by now you can already see that building your training program around your unique body and working with someone who's really knowledgeable, cares about you, has your back, all that can save you tons of agony and frustration. So another shameless plug, just hit the coaching menu at thelifetimeathlete.com and get rocking. And I would say this, hashtag smart training. Summer clients are piling up. And I'm not going to take too many more folks through the summer season. So if you want to get in, I'd love to work with you, but I never take more people than I can give the ultimate quality experience to and also have that for myself. So get yourself a coach, whether it's me or somebody else.
Absolutely. Well, let's say we do these things and we've got these four items, you know, pretty squarely in our minds. Where do we go from here?
You have to prioritize your goals. Goals are often what we have, but I totally love and endorse the idea of, no matter how challenging, getting it down to having only one major goal. It's clear and it's effective, and you just get more results than when you try to use too much multitasking.
Absolutely. We talk about that quite a bit here.
Yeah, so at most have a short list of two or three items that are complementary and they're going to work together. You're just going to be happier and more successful in the long run.
Absolutely, no question. So how do you go about coaching people to think about that? Like it's obviously you have a process.
Yes, and I've read some great books on goal setting applications, so I don't believe we have to go too deep now, but I just say let's try to align your goal with the data of those previous four points. So the strengths, weaknesses, injury history, and movement dysfunction, if it exists. And I'd like to try to get a person, and I want to help them work with them to answer a few questions. First of all, does my goal give me the opportunity to lean heavily on my existing strengths. And that's just a real success equation there. If you're picking a goal that matches up with your beast, not that you can't do it otherwise, but your chance for success is indeed enhanced.
Yeah, I like that. Your success equation. I just took a quick note. I like how you phrased that. But it's true. If if you want to play to your strengths and realize the greater upside, that's a thing.
Indeed. And so then we go to the next question that I like to ask is, do I have any weaknesses that are going to significantly interfere with this goal? So in other words, that's the case where it's like, oh, okay, well, we want to shore up those weaknesses so they just don't pull the goal path down. And so that's the complement to the first question.
Absolutely.
Question number three, behind curtain number three, numeral trace. Have I got, or do I have, a movement pattern or a motor skill that I need to tune up, which would really be important in this pursuit? So same kind of thing. It's like, oh, okay, well, if I, you know, let's say dealing with someone who's a basketball player, and you know, there's a number of different movement patterns that you can identify in basketball, but if someone has kind of a really clear deficiency in one of them, we might say, oh, well, let's tune up how you're moving there so that you can perform better and stay healthier.
Absolutely. No, this is lining up. It's really straightforward. It's making sense. Carry it on.
I'm loving that, because you know what we say, science meets common sense at TLA. Are there any old injuries that may be present, and do they present challenges in this journey? So again, you know, like me with my shoulder, I can't do the amount of swimming that I once did in life. And so it's probably something that I have had to face, like, oh, you know, swimming for leisure and recreation is fine, but doing it for fitness or even competitively, that's not going to work for this body that I'm living in right now. And I made peace with that. That's fine. That's one idea. The other one is, well, you know, say in another person's case, if they have an injury that isn't that limiting, they might still find a way to work around it with that orthopedic workaround.
Right, right. So when you mentioned that, let's just take you with the shoulder. If your goal was to say it, you know, like an triathlon, an Ironman or something of that length, right? If you said that, you would coach yourself, well, that old injury is really going to provide a significant hurdle. Whereas if you change the goal, then you would have more enjoyment, not only in the training, but a greater opportunity to have success ultimately in the pursuit.
Yeah, if I chose to do the triathlon, I would probably fail. And also, you know, just trying to get after the swimming, no matter how intelligent I thought I would be, you know, I would really wreck my shoulder just because that's the condition that it's in. So what the other choice would be, oh, well, why don't you just pick the duathlon? So now you just run bike and, if I wanted to do it, I could do that and that would be fine. Right now I don't have that on my plate. I've got some different things, probably talk about it on a different show, but
sure.
Okay. Drum roll, you know, we're getting to the end of the show, you know, take me home tonight. And always got to, you know, love you, Eddie Money, of course, Ronnie Spector there. We want to leverage our training. And so that's where all this data collection business, which is really simple, comes into play. We take our self-knowledge that we've created, because, you know, here at the Lifetime Athlete, we're always saying knowledge is power, but self-knowledge is ultimate power. And we adopt the training to best fit the goal and the beast.
Indeed. Indeed.
I wish we did this 5 times a day, man. That's so good. So, all right. Regarding strengths, in what ways can you bias your overall training to make it a go-to which is always a great move. So I'm going to try to provide some examples, and you know, I'll kind of chat my way through these. So I've got this thing that says marathon runner. So a marathon runner with a natural gift of endurance, one of our five categories, and that's typical of marathoners who are successful, might do a slightly higher percentage of overall workload in those endurance building zones of training, if you will. So steady state work that's in that zone two to possibly zone three. This fits the body that endurance oriented runner has. And it also fits the demands of the event. So that's good. However, a more speed and power oriented runner, let's say a runner who was successful in the middle distances running 800, 1500, is moving up to run the marathon. So we know that the physiology of that beast, the middle distances are a better fit than is the marathon, but okay, there's the goal. And so now we say if that runner has this marathon goal, we might actually use a bit more in realistic terms, understanding how to put the training together, of interval work, possibly in zone four, because that's that athlete's wheelhouse, and we can kind of convert it a little bit to make it fit the marathon goal.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So yeah. I got a feeling some of this gets a little bit sciencey techy, so I'm just exposing what the coaching, not just the coaching relationship, but the what goes into being a good coach. You know, you have to work with people, but you also really have to know the science. And that's why I'm endorsing, hey, folks, get a coach. Or if you're self-coached, that's cool. But definitely study, you know, and learn some of these things because it's going to help you. Now let's flip the coin, that same coin. So if our enduring marathoner, the first part of that example, lacks good speed mechanics, there's another one of our, you know, categories there, and can't express force appropriately, has an excessive ground contact time, then we can do a bit of work on that relative weakness for this athlete and shore it up a bit so that we improve overall running economy, which is really important in the marathon. Shout out to Eliud Kipchoge. So that's how we support the plan. And so some of that work more recently has been done by Dr. Gareth Sanford. And his work on what's called anaerobic speed reserve, or ASR. So we've got that guy who, if we can mechanically make him just a little bit more economical and quicker, then he's not running as close to his red line for 26 miles as he would have been. And so we get a benefit there. And we just would say we're never trying to turn that person into an elite sprinter. It's not possible with the body, nor is it appropriate for the event. We're just tweaking things to get them, get potential out of them. And then the same thing, our other athlete, the former 815 athlete, she's going to need to, she's got to get those long endurance runs in for her marathon goal in training. But we know because of the body type and the physiology that we might have to back the pace down a bit and spend some of those long runs going a little slower down into zone one and develop the aerobic base more, using less frequency so we don't break this athlete down. And then in the training sessions, going back to Dr. Sanford's work, we can say, oh, well, what we're going to do with those intervals is we're going to carefully add volume so that we can improve, here's another great science term, velocity at VO2 max.
Yes, indeed.
And again, I don't think the listeners need to hear all the minutiae about what's happening at the mitochondrial level, but nonetheless, this is what we do. And so many roads will lead to Rome, but a good coach can help you set your training up so that you find your most successful road. And that's what a lot of this stuff is all about.
No question. Absolutely.
Okay, let's move away from talking about endurance athletics and look at team sport players. So soccer, hockey, baseball, basketball, football, again, lots of different contexts there, but a lot of similarities as well. And so let's say that we have a player in any number of sports who has trouble cutting off the left foot and going to his right. Well, in dynamic play, this would be a real problem because he will only have one good movement option, and the opposition will quickly figure that out and take advantage of the situation. So no bueno. So what we do is we put some exercises into most of the training sessions where we coach this athlete through knowing how to stack the rib cage over the pelvis and how to actually displace the guts in the right vector for momentum. And the guts move, and we need to think of them moving in three directions when we load and explode, and knowing how to align his center of mass appropriately. So it's not always vertical with the base of support. If when you're cutting and angulating, we oftentimes want a straight line, but that straight line is not vertical. Really key point there. And we would take what this might look like is we would take various cutting and acceleration drills where we use cones and medicine balls and bands and other applications to help entrain and ingrain and strengthen that movement pattern.
Entrain and ingrain, I like it.
Oh, yeah, I'm still loving it. You used pomposity back there a while back. So cool. So if that same dude, let's say he has history. So we went through talking about strengths and weaknesses with those runners. And then we're talking obviously about movement patterns and injury history now with the team sport athlete, just to use examples. If that same dude has a history of an ACL reconstruction on the left leg, which is a common scenario, you know, with that aforementioned example and in these sports, we're going to have to make sure that we train for good dynamic unilateral control in his limb and strength, speed, stability by doing a lot of single leg weight work or resisted work and plyometrics to, again, restore that. That's probably what's holding him back, you know, so that he's not able to load and explode and cut properly, so we can rebuild that pattern and confidence and also, you know, finish out optimal rehab on that injured area.
Yes, absolutely. Those are, I love the examples as always. Love seeing the examples.
Yeah, nothing has to be too fancy. I even think that some of the things I just rambled were that, but there are lots more basic examples, but the take home message is, you know, thanks Ronnie and Eddie. The take home message is to know yourself and know your athlete, and then put that knowledge to use in making a more personalized program that practically guarantees mega results.
Yeah. And I think that, that's what you always endorse, and it's very real.
Yeah, I love seeing these things work and the big smiles that people get on their face. You know, your success is my joy. So in parting, I would say this. June, as I mentioned before, it's peak performance training month here at TLA. So this week's topic in our masterclass, too late to sign up, but coming up today for the lucky ones. It's personalized training, and we're going further into those examples and doing some deep whiteboarding. then we'll follow up with effective training next week. You know, what makes a training program effective? Intelligent training. Ooh, Mensa-like. And lifelong training also as we progress through the month. And some really great tools that can just keep you from flopping and schlepping around and actually kicking ass, which is really what we're all here to do. So as you can sense from today's discussion, there's a whole lot of magic in peaking out performance capacity. Once you know what you need to train your beast for your goal, which we visit on the day, you can then get artistic about how you design workouts and organize them into blocks. So this is next complemented by assessing those responses and adaptations that you get from training and recovery. So you use my proprietary WISE system, W-I-S-E, Get Wise About Training. We'll be introducing that. And ultimately, you learn the specific tweaks and adjustments that can help you to stay maximally athletic and healthy through your lifespan.
No question. No question. It's all there, and it's all groovy.
Hope this helped. Guys, thanks for joining us. Keep being awesome. And Coach Jay-Z out. Catch you next time.
Adios, everyone.